Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Thomas Manton's A Practical Exposition of the Lord's Prayer. And last time we started, "And lead us not into temptation." He began by a brief intro. What is the evil deprecated? And that's temptation. And then the manner is to lead us not. And so he went into doctrine number one, which was that temptations are a usual evil wherewith we encounter in the present world. And he broke that up into several points. Number one, he's going to open the nature of temptations. Number two, give you some observations concerning them. And number three, the reasons of it. And so we started in the nature of temptations. He said we are said to tempt God when we put the proof whether he will be good to his word. And then man is tempted. So man tempts God, but then man is tempted. And then he's tempted first by God, and secondly by Satan, and thirdly by his own heart. And last time we did how a man is tempted by God. And he tempts our grace and then our corruptions in us. He uses providence, the things that happen in our life. He withdraws his grace. He permits Satan's temptations. And then talked about some rules. God's tempting is not to inform himself, but to discover our issues to ourselves. And it's always good. And he doesn't tempt to sin. When we ask him to lead us not into temptation, we're not saying remove all trials, and for a total exemption from him, from them. We ask him to help us submit to them. Next, in the trials, he has a great deal of care for his people through them. We manifest weakness as well as grace. Yet that weakness is to be done away. And God permits us to be tempted of Satan as instruments for his glory and our good. And when God permits Satan to exercise us, if he give us grace to fight and to maintain the combat, that is a great mercy. And that brought us to the end of the section of God tempting man. And brings us up to the second section of Satan's temptations. And Lord willing, that's where we're going to continue on with this reading. I'll go ahead and begin. Mr. Manton says, "Secondly, there are temptations from Satan as well as from God, who is called the tempter." Satan is called the tempter, Matthew 4, verse 3. "Now the devil's temptations, they are evil and for evil," to cause evil. Now how does the devil tempt? Number one, by propounding objects, Luke 4, verse 5, "He showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time." He had nothing to work upon within, so Satan could grab a hold of nothing within Christ for the temptation. Therefore, he propounds outward objects. So still, the devil tempts us with a curious eye to take in the object, that it may be a bait and a snare to the soul. Achan takes notice of it himself in Joshua 7:21. "When I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment and a wedge of gold, then I coveted them and took them." I saw, I coveted, and I took. The eye awakens desire, and desire that inclines to practice. So Proverbs 23:31, "Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth his color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright." Unless we shut the windows of the soul, this pestilent plague gets in by the senses. The heart is corrupted by objects that we take in by the senses, as it corrupted Eve, dealt with her first by the sense. The forbidden fruit was full in her way, then the devil sets upon her. Number two, he tempts by the persuasion of instruments, who are the devil's spokesmen. Thus was Joseph tempted by the enticements and blandishments of the mistress, Genesis 39, verse 7. And many times the devil sets nearest friends and relations to weaken their zeal and withdraw their hearts from God. Matthew 16, verse 23. Saith Christ to Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan. It was Peter said it, yet Christ rebuked Satan, for the devil had a hand in it. He makes one of Christ's disciples his instrument. The devil did. Number three, he does it by internal suggestion. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 1. And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. That is, by internal suggestion. John 13, verse 2. The devil put it into the heart of Judas to betray him. He haunts and pesters the hearts of men by vain thoughts and carnal imaginations. So the god of this world is said to blind their minds, 2 Corinthians 4, verse 4. Number 4, by stirring up the humors of the body, when he sees men inclined to wrath and angry motions or lust, the devil joins and makes the tempest the more violent. He knows what use to make of an angry look, a wanton glance. He knows how to tempt by awakening the humors of our own body against us, what we might be naturally prone to. And Mr. Manton says, take some observations here. Number one, in all sins Satan joins, he is not idle, I-D-L-E, but makes use of every inclination of ours, and he sees the tree, as he sees the tree leaning, he joins the issue. If we're leaning one way, he tries to help it along. But some sins are purely of his suggestion, horrid sins, and such as are so very evil that they could come from no other but from the devil. Such sins as could not be acted by man in an ordinary course of sinning, as Judas his treason, though he were devil enough to plot such a thing, yet it is said Satan put it into his heart. And such singular diabolical suggestions may be darted into the bosoms of believers sometimes, thoughts of atheism, blasphemy, unnatural sins, self-murder, suspicion of the gospel, these things the devil throws in. Therefore, Ephesians 6, verse 16, believers are warned to quench these fiery darts that the devil hurls into the souls of men. Number two, every man is haunted with special temptations from temper or their own temperament, sex, age, custom, calling, company, course of affairs. These things are often spoken of in Scripture. From temper or temperament, God makes use of temper, for though he plants all grace in the hearts of the regenerate, yet there are certain graces wherein they are eminent, as Timothy for temperance and Moses for meekness, etc. Thus Paul speaks of the law in his members, Romans 7 verse 23. The devil may find forces from the temper of the body to destroy the soul. So also from sex, or your gender, as he beguiled Eve, 2 Corinthians 11 verse 3. And from age, we read of youthful lusts, 2 Timothy 2 verse 22. And how strong the devil is about young ones, 1 John 2 verse 13. I have written unto you, young men, because ye have overcome the wicked one. They are most assaulted with pride, with youthful lusts suitable to their age. And so from custom and education, Psalm 18, verse 23, I kept myself from mine iniquity. Every man has his iniquity, that is, such as his education and custom has wrought upon him, which makes the sin prevail over other sins. A child of God has a predominant sin, not over grace, for that is inconsistent with sincerity, but some master sin which prevails over the rest. According as the channel is cut, so corrupt nature runs, but some in this channel and some in that, Every man has his special sin, and accordingly the devil plies him. Then our calling is a special temptation. 1 Timothy 3, verse 6, the apostle speaks that a bishop should not be a novice, lest, being lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. Pride and ostentation of gifts and vainglory in such public service. Many other sins follow every calling. Therefore, if you would be skilled in Satan's enterprises, you must mind, temper, age, and calling. So, or also, company. As a man's company is, his soul is insensibly tainted. As a man that walks in the sun, S-U-N, is tanned before he is aware, so are the souls of men sullied and defiled by carnal company before they are aware. A man would think, of all sins, passion is so uncomely that it should not tempt another man. Yet it is said in Proverbs 22, verse 24 and 5, make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways, and get a snare to thy soul. For the more accustomed to them, the less odious they seem. So, by little and little, our spirits are shaped and fitted for such a sin. There are certain sins that are more special temptations. Look, as every disease has a diet which suits with it, so all sins in the soul. Satan knows what baits we will catch at. It may be a man that is addicted to the pleasures of the flesh may despise profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, and therefore the devil will not ply him with that. So a man that is addicted to gain despises pleasure, and the devil suits him with a bait that suits the disease of the soul. It is an opinion the devils have their several wards and quarters, some for such a sort of sinners, others for another sort. He's saying some people think that. Look, as the heathens had their several gods, which were indeed devils, as Bacchus, the god of riot, or patron of good fellowship, and Venus of wantonness and love, and Mars, the devil of revengeful and angry spirits, and we read of Mammon for wealth, Matthew 6, verse 24, he says, I know it is a fictio personae, Latin words, to make the matter more sensible. There is a person feigned, or it's like a person, as the, representing these traits. But there may be something of this truth in it, that the devils have several quarters, some to humor the covetous, others enticing the wanton. Others lie legers in taverns and drinking houses, to draw men to beastly excess, and others about the revengeful to awaken their rage. But all this, however it be, it is the opinion of some, should make us watchful over our own desires and inclinations, for that is it the devil makes use of to set upon us. Number three, the sin of the devil tempting must be distinguished from our sin in consenting. If the devil tempt and we consent not, it is his sin only. The envious man may throw weeds over the garden wall, but if we do not suffer them to root there or allow them to root there, it is not the gardener's fault, but the fault of the envious man. So the devil may fling in temptations, fiery darts, atheistical or blasphemous thoughts, yet if we throw them out with indignation and give no harbor and entertainment to them there, it is our misery, but the devil's sin. And therefore, if our hearts abhor them at the very first rising, though they be man's cross to bear, they will be put upon Satan's account. Number four, Satan, if he cannot prevail by the first temptation to draw us to sin, he will seek to prevail by a second or subsequent temptation to draw us to trouble and discomfort. If he cannot weaken grace, he may molest and disturb our comfort by flinging in blasphemous thoughts, which is abhorred by a Christian. If he cannot draw you to deny God, then he will seek to cloud things that you may suspect your own estate, and thus our way is made wearisome to us. Look, as a candle which sticks to a stone wall, though it cannot burn the wall, yet it smudges and defiles it. So the children of God, when the devil seeks to make their temptations stick to them, though it does not burn their hearts with these fiery darts of blasphemy and atheism, they catch not there, they don't catch there, yet they weaken our comfort. And then his second temptation is to bring us to doubt of God's love, to doubt of our own faith, and to draw us to impatiency and murmuring at God's hand. Therefore, it should be our care not only to withstand the devil's first temptation, but his second and any subsequent ones also. Number five, certainly they cannot stand long that seem to give up themselves to Satan's snares. How may this be done? Any carnal affection unmortified lays us open to the devil. 1 Timothy 6, verse 9, they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. If a man cherish his worldliness and do not mortify it, he lies ready to be seized upon as a ready prey, P-R-E-Y, for Satan. Judas, he had the bag of money, I believe, and he lay open to the devil. His worldliness increased upon him, so the devil enters into him. Again, when we ride into the devil's quarters and will parley with temptation, when we freely open the windows of the senses unto alluring objects and can dally with the snares and play about the temptations, then we do but tempt God to leave us and tempt the devil to surprise us. And therefore, be sober, be watchful, for your adversary the devil, walketh about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour, 1 Peter 5, verse 8. Be sober. What is sobriety? A holy, H-O-L-Y, a holy moderation in the use of worldly things. Be sure not to leave any carnal affection unmortified. And then be watchful. Take heed not to play about the temptation, nor put yourselves upon occasions of sin, for then we lie open to the devil and give him an advantage against us. Now thus much for the second sort of temptations, such as come from Satan. Now the third sort of temptations are those which arise from our own hearts. So we call these urgings and solicitations to sin which we feel in our bosoms. Concerning this also, I shall give some observations. Number one, if there were no devil to tempt us, yet the heart of man is fruitful enough of all that is evil. Matthew 15, verse 19, out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, blasphemies. There is a black catalog, and all comes out of the heart of man. And among the rest, observe, there is murder, which strikes at the life of man, and blasphemy, which strikes at the honor and being of God. Though the devil should stand by and say nothing to us, we have enough within us to put us upon all kinds of evil. Jeremiah 17, verse 9, the heart is deceitful above all things, and desperately wicked, who can know it? And as to actual sins, there is a difference. But as to original sin, it is the same in all, in everyone. All the sins that ever have been or shall be committed in the world, they are virtually in our natures, like little seeds with potentially to come out. They are but original sin acted and drawn out this way and that way, as all numbers are but one multiplied. Cain's murder, Judas's treason, Julian's apostasy, and his enmity to Christ, the seed and root of all is in our nature. The same kinds. And if we were but left to ourselves and had the same temptations and occasions, we should be as bad as others. Such as we would not imagine that ever we should commit is in our heart. 2 Kings 8:13, is thy servant a dog that he should do this great thing? When he had been told of those horrid cruelties, he should act upon the women and children of Israel. No man knows the depth of his own wickedness if loosened of the chains and the restraints that are there if they're taken off. At first, nature abhors them in the conceit or the conception or even thought of them. But when God permits us to lie under the temptation and fair occasion, man is not to be trusted. Our own hearts are not to be trusted. We see, in this respect, what need there is to pray that God would not leave us under the power of temptation, because the heart of man is prone, naturally inclinable to all evil, all sorts of it, and to large degrees. There are new actual sins, but there is no new original sin. That is but one and the same in all persons and at all times. The root of all the mischief which has been in the world is within us by nature. Number two, that without the flesh, the world and the devil can have no power over us. A man cannot be compelled to sin against his own consent. He may be compelled to suffer temptation or allow it, but he is a sinner by his own choice. The world would not hurt us were it not for lust in the heart, and lust here in this case and often is just generally any corrupt desire in our heart. So the world would not hurt us were it not for our own corrupt desires in our hearts. 2 Peter 1:4, escaping the corruption of the world through lust. I say it is not the beauty or sweetness of the creature, but lust, again corrupt desires, which is our ruin and undoing, and that makes the world so dangerous to us. A spider sucks the poison from the same flower from which a bee would suck honey. The fault is not in the flower, but in the spider. The devil can do nothing unless we give him leave. He can't make us sin. The fire is kindled in our own bosoms, and Satan only does blow it up into a flame. Says Nazianzen, we have the coals, like the fire coals, in our own heart, and the devil does but come and blow them up, blow on them so they inflame. Suggestion does nothing without consent. In vain does one knock at the door, and none within to look out and make answer. So all other temptations would be in vain if there were not somewhat within that would close with what is suggested from Satan, if there wasn't something in us that would agree with him and close with him. James 1:14, every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed by his own concupiscence. If your hearts did not yield, if you did resist, the devil and the world could not force you. When Satan came to Christ, he might molest him, but he found nothing in him, John 14:30. As a glass of pure water may be shaken, but there is no filth, no mud there discovered. But now, the best of men, they have somewhat within them naughtiness and corruption enough in their own hearts, upon which Satan may work and inflame them with his fiery darts. In short, we may commit sin without Satan, but Satan cannot betray us to sin without ourselves, cannot have his desire upon us, without our consent. Number three, the flesh does not only make us flexible and yielding to temptations, but is active and stirring in our hearts to force and impel us thereto. there is a law in our members, Romans 7, verse 23, a powerful active principle within us that is always urging us to sin. We think and speak too gently of our own corrupt hearts, when we think the corruption is sleepy and works not until it be irritated by outward objects and Satan's suggestions. No, there is an active, stirring principle within us that pours out sin as a fountain does waters, though nobody comes to drink of them. As Genesis 6, verse 5, every imagination of the thoughts of his heart is only evil continually. There is a mint in man's heart that is always at work coining evil thoughts, evil desires, evil motions, and the flesh lusteth against the spirit, Galatians 5, verse 17. And sin wrought in me all manner of concupiscence, Romans 7, verse 8. Though there were no other occasion to irritate but God's law and the motions of his spirit, yet there is a continual fermentation wrought by these corrupt humors in our hearts. Natural concupiscence does not lie idle in them, I-D-L-E, but is active and warring, and the objects that are in the world and the solicitations of the devil make it more violent. Number four, the temptations of the flesh and the world go in conjunction and do mutually help one another. And therefore it is said in 1 John 2, verse 16, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, etc. Mark, whatever is in the world, he does not mention the object, but the lusts, because these are complicated and folded up together in the temptation. The bait is in the world, but the appetite and desire we have from the flesh. And this is intimated in that passage in James 1:14. Every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust or corrupt desires and enticed. There are two words there, drawn away and enticed. The drawing away notes the vehemency of desire or inclination of our hearts, and the enticement, that is from the object. Both ways do corrupt work by force and flattery. The great bait is pleasure, the contentment that we take in outward enjoyments, and we are carried out to it by the vehement propension of corrupt nature. Number five, this vehement propension of corrupt nature to outward things is set at work by a hope of gaining them or a fear to lose them. And so we are assaulted on every hand by right hand and left hand temptations. By right hand temptations from the flatteries and comforts of the world, which are the more dangerous because of their easy insinuation into and strong operation upon our hearts. And so our comforts prove a snare to us and an occasion to the flesh, as the apostle says in Galatians 5, verse 13. And then there are left-hand temptations which arise from shame or fear of worldly evils, as the other did arise from a desire or hope of good. So the apostle in Galatians 6, verse 12, as many as desire to make a fair show in the flesh, they constrain you to be circumcised, only lest they should suffer persecution for the cross of Christ. That was their temporizing then to comply with the Jews who had some national privileges under the Roman government and had better security to their worldly interests than possibly thorough Christians could have. Now, to avoid both these, the apostle, when he presses Christians to all those graces which are necessary, he presses them to temperance and patience. 2 Peter 1, verses 5 and 6, add to knowledge temperance and to knowledge patience. Both these are armor of proof against worldly temptations, temperance against the delights, and patience against the evils and troubles of the world. It was never yet so well with the world, but that Christians, those that are so in good in earnest and mean to go to heaven and keep a good conscience will be assaulted on both sides. So Christians, even the most sincere ones and earnest ones, are assaulted in both those ways, in things pleasing and in things difficult. Number six, that there are no avoiding either of these snares and temptations as long as any carnal affection remains unmortified. For until a man be dead to worldly comforts and hardened against worldly sorrows, he does but lie naked and open to Satan. 1 Timothy 6, verse 9, he that will be rich falls into temptation and a snare. And what is said of riches, the same is true of pleasure. He that is vehemently addicted that way will soon come to put God out of the throne and make his belly and his pleasure his God. 2 Timothy 3, verse 4, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Any lust that is cherished, that again, any corrupt desire that is cherished and indulged will betray us. As for honor, John 5, verse 44, how can ye believe which receive honor one of another and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? True faith cannot be planted in that heart that is not purified until there be a prevailing interest established for Christ over all carnal affections. Grace bears no sway in us and has no power over us if we're not mortified. The ambition and love of respect from men will necessarily make us unsound in the profession of godliness. Well, then, it stands us upon to allow and cherish no secret sin, but to observe what are the tender parts of our hearts, or which way our corruptions lie, what we're most prone to, where subjection to God is most apt to stick with us or to be stuck, and we get stuck at it. Psalm 119, verse 133, order my steps in thy word, and let not any iniquity have dominion over me. Though we seem to have a zeal in other things, yet if one lust, corrupt desire, be indulged, we shall soon swerve from our duty. True obedience to God is inconsistent with the dominion of any one lust or corrupt affection. I say, though a man, out of some slender and insufficient touch of religion upon his heart, may go right for a while and do many things gladly, yet that corruption which is indulged and under the power of which a man lies will at length or eventually draw him off from God. And therefore, no one sin should have dominion over us. When does sin reign or have dominion over us? When we do not endeavor to mortify it and to cut off the provisions that may feed that lust or corrupt desire, any corrupt desire. Chrysostom's observation is, the apostle does not say, let it not tyrannize over you, but let it not reign over you, R-E-I-G-N. That is, when you suffer it or allow it to have a quiet reign in your hearts. Number seven, the more we sin upon the mere impulsion of the flesh and without an external temptation, the more heinous is our offense, for then the heart is carried of its own accord to sin. So if you sin without even any temptation, then you're more liable because you did it all by yourself. Ezekiel 16, verses 33 and 34, they give gifts to all whores, but thou givest thy gifts to all thy lovers and hirest them that they may come unto thee for thy whoredoms. And the contrary is in thee from other women in thy whoredoms, whereas none followeth thee to commit whoredoms, and in that thou givest a reward, and no reward is given unto thee, therefore thou art contrary. These are expressions to set forth their idolatry. But that which is intended there is this, that they were not desired or solicited, but merely carried to sin by their own proper motion, which exceedingly aggravates sin. Why? For then it is a sign of the heart is carried of its own accord by its own weight, as a heavy body is moved downward, not by the impression of outward force, but by its own natural propension. Now, when do men thus merely sin upon the impulsions of the flesh? I will instance in three cases. Number one, when the temptation is so small and inconsiderable that it should not sway with any reasonable man. It is said in Amos 2, verse 6, they sold the poor for a pair of shoes, and for a piece of bread will that man transgress, Proverbs 28, verse 21. When pleasure and profit, P-R-O-F-I-T, is so inconsiderable as that it could not rationally make up a temptation, then men sin merely upon the corruptions of their own flesh. When the devil has to do with great souls, such as Christ was, he propounds the glory of all the world, Matthew chapter 4, oh, but a lesser price will serve the turn with those that are deeply engaged already, that are biased with their own propension. For instance, a little ease in carnal satisfaction, a slothful humor or temperament, is enough to take them off from the sweetness of communion with God and the pleasure and contentment that they might enjoy with Him in holy exercises, H-O-L-Y, exercises. Look, as in general, it is a great aggravation of all sin that for such paltry trifles we turn the back upon God and His grace. All sinners do so. They part with all their hopes by Christ for a mess of pottage, for a little pleasant present pleasure. That is profaneness indeed, Hebrews 12, verse 16. So in particular things, when the smallest temptation seems to be strong enough to draw off our hearts from our duty, to bring us to a sin of omission when it is needful to go and converse with God in secret, a little ease and sloth hangs upon us, and we cannot shake it off. Or when we are drawn to a sin of commission by an inconsiderable matter, by the smallest worldly interest as can be mentioned, for a piece of bread and a pair of shoes. Number two, when men tempt themselves or provoke Satan to tempt them, as those which make provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof, Romans 13, verse 14, that cater for their lusts, their corrupt desires, that contrive how to feed them and how to cherish those inordinate affections in their hearts, that run into the devil's quarters, that bespeak a temptation, or as it is James 5, verse 5, that nourish their hearts as in a day of slaughter. To nourish our hearts is to feed our lusts, our corrupt desires, to put strength into the enemy's hand. When a commander sent to his prince to know how he should keep such a rebellious town in order, he sent him this answer, that he should starve the dog and strengthen the clog, that he should weaken the city and strengthen the garrison. That was his meaning. Truly, what was his advice in that outward case, that is the duty of a Christian, to weaken his lusts and stir to be strengthening grace. He should be increasing the better part and putting the spirit in heart by godly exercises, his own spirit, by treasuring up promises, getting arguments and fresh encouragements against sin, and by weakening the flesh, starving and cutting off provisions for the flesh, the things that feed our flesh and the things that we desire corruptly in our hearts. But on the contrary, when men cater for the flesh, provide for it, indulge carnal distempers, and feed them with that diet which they affect, these tempt themselves and seem willing to lie under their bondage and to be glad of it. And number three, when a man is a sinner to his loss and has reasons of nature to dissuade him, as well as reasons of grace, not only religion, but his civil interests would counsel him to do otherwise, as he that brings a blot upon his name or ruin upon his estate by evil courses, when men draw on iniquity with a cart rope, as the expression is in Isaiah 5 verse 18, that is, when it is not pleasure, but a very toil and burden and temporal inconvenience to them to be sinful, that industriously make it their business, those that are holden with the cords of their own sins, Proverbs 5 verse 22. He speaks of such as did bring temporal inconveniences upon themselves, as did consume their flesh and their own bodies. These certainly are those that have cause to complain of their own hearts, not to put it on Satan, but upon themselves. All right, and that is the end of that overall section, the nature of temptations, the overall point of this phrase, the nature of temptations. So he goes on to overall point number two. He says, I come now to give the reasons why this is so usual an evil we encounter with in the world, temptation. But we're going to go ahead and stop there for this time. And Lord willing, pick up with that the next reading. But until then, go seeking that God would grant you an understanding of just how corrupt and how wicked we all really are in our hearts. We pray he show us that and that he grant us a hatred of it because it's against him. Sin is against God. And we pray that he grant us a love for him above all things, including any sins that we might be prone to or have as kind of a favorite in our own hearts, especially those. May we constantly seek him for help in weeding the garden of our hearts to mortify these things of the flesh. And may Christ always have the throne in our hearts. And again, may we do it out of love for him, for so great a love that he's had for us. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.